from awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
It's that time again, or almost. Startling as it may seem, the mad stash is looming as fall takes tighter hold, meaning time to figure out where which of those gorgeous but tender plants you couldn't resist at the garden center this spring can possibly be overwintered to live to grow again another season. Well, I've got Ken Drews here with me, and overwintering tactics are the topic of this month's Q&A, where we entertain your urgent garden questions. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Margaret.
You got lots of answers? You got all the answers?
Are you tender, Margaret?
Yeah, I'm very tender, but you do have all the answers, right? Okay, good.
Well, I have a question for you right off the bat. What's tender? What do you mean by tender?
Well, not hardy, where outdoors over the winter wherever you shall garden. So, I think non-hardy, right? Can't live outside.
These are perennials that you can't right. leave over winter outdoors because
right.
they will freeze
right.
and die.
Right. They might be perennial in Peru. Right. But so we got a bumper crop of questions this time, especially from Facebook. Thank you all at facebook.com/awaytogarden. We got questions ranging from figs to cannas, dahlias, rosemaries, alphaneers, citrus, more. But first, I think strategically, don't you think we have to talk strategy first? Because, my places in my house or barn or shed that I might figure out to use to store things aren't identical to yours, right? Let alone someone somewhere in another region.
Well, you never have enough places, and they're never exactly the right places.
Right.
And we know the first thing we do is we've got those vacationing house plants outdoors, and we bring them into the house, and we put them in the sunniest
right.
windows or wherever we can, and they're going to have to survive with the temperatures that we like. But that's not all that many plants that want
right that really like it
like.
Right, because and really the what plants like, whether it's in the growing season or when they're being overwintered or whatever, what plants like is a combination of humidity, temperature, light, and then soil moisture, right? It's an equation, and it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. So we're trying to figure out a simulation, a mix of those four elements probably, that, if you're totally dormant, it's probably totally dry, and the humidity, as long as you're not rotting, it's not 100% humidity, is probably fine. The temperature is probably low, but not frozen. And, we want to make a formula for each plant or group of plants. But it is, I've killed a lot of things trying to do this, haven't you?
Well, I'm temporarily dormant, so.
Yeah.
You're making me think of something that we could all do to save energy in our homes and help our plants is drop that temperature
right.
in the evening, because all the plants want that.
Right. Or have a room or two, if we have zones especially, or if we can turn off some, if we have old-style radiators, whatever it is, if we can do something to make some room. Do you have anything like a sun room or a mud room?
Yes, I have a sun room.
Okay.
And most of my plants go into the sun room, and the temperature's pretty low in there, and I keep them on the dry side. So they're not dormant to the point of losing leaves,
right.
because most of these are evergreen plants from other climates. But the temperature is about, during the day it's probably 60, and then it goes down to at the lowest 50.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the plants that really like it warm are the ones that aren't here anymore.
I see. Because you can't really provide that. You're not really providing that with good light as well, right?
And humidity. It's
right.
so hard to keep the humidity
right.
up in a home.
Right. Now, you don't use a humidifier or whatever, anything like that, or trays of pebbles, or, do you have anything else going on like that?
Well, I have my hospital window. And
you
that's
have
the
your
window.
Wait yeah. a minute. You have your what?
My hospital window.
Do you have a nurse's uniform? I need to know the details.
just the cap.
Okay, good.
So I could either serve Good Humor ice cream or be the nurse.
Okay.
And the plants that I really have to look at just about every day, they need watering every day or something. And there's metal trays in the bottom of this. It's like a bay window, sort of. It projects out.
Oh.
And it's got a metal tray that has, it actually has a heater under it, a heat mat. So it's a little bit warm, and it's got pebbles and moisture and higher humidity. And that's where either the most beautiful plants go well, sort of, and the ones that need attention. It's not enough light to start seeds, but it's, you know, mostly things that need to be maybe watered every day, some begonias, things that need to be just watched. Because the other guys are in the sunroom and they're lucky if they get watered once a week. It gets, because there's hardly any room to walk around.
Right.
Huh. And then in the spring, they all go outside. And in the fall, a little bit too late, they all come inside.
Okay. So, I mean, you said hospital. I had one question from Facebook from Linda mm-hmm. L. And she says, do you have any secret to get rid of fungus gnats that develop on plants brought in for the winter? She tried a layer of sand, but that did not work, like a mulch of sand on the top of the pots. In your hospital window, would somebody who had fungus gnats be in the hospital?
No, we try. We go for prevention here.
Okay, so how does that work?
If you have fungus gnats, and those are those little things, they're like fluttering around close to the soil. And if you look really close, you might see these little tiny worms sort of creeping around. And fungus gnats eat decaying matter, and that's a sign of overwatering.
Mm.
And the way to get rid of fungus gnats is to let your plants dry out.
Back off between waterings, yeah. Huh.
And if you've got a bad case, stop watering. And
right.
Watch the plant. You know, if it's something like an African violet, which are really prone to fungus gnats because they always have a humusy or very organic
right.
matter in their mix, in their medium. So you want to let that plant dry out. You don't want to kill it by drying it out too much, but they're kind of succulents. You can let them dry out quite a bit. Keep your eye on it, and drying out and your fungus gnats will go away. And also what I do is I have one of those yellow sticky cards sort of above all the plants in the window, and that thing gets covered with bugs, but the plants don't.
So you are luring them onto this sticky, it's like, it's not fly paper, but it's like the groovy, more modern, greenhousey kind of version of fly paper, right? It's sticky that way.
It's sticky on both sides.
Yeah.
It's yellow, and try not to touch it, but you always do.
Yes, and then it's adhered to your shirt, and then that's very attractive.
Oh, my gosh. Or a plant leaf, and
yeah.
then that's it. Plant leaf goes.
Yeah.
It's very sticky. And
okay.
Most of the insects are attracted to that yellow color,
yeah.
which we, in the old days, we could have called it Kodak yellow, but people don't know what that is anymore.
Right.
Or taxicab yellow, and people don't know what that is anymore. So it's yellow.
So I often refer to things that I overwinter as investment plants, you know, like, in other words, I mean, and houseplants, they're sort of investment plants in the sense that I use them to decorate outside, as sort of, quote, annual color in the garden season, but then I enjoy them for their beauty indoors, too. So they're sort of an investment. But what I mean is, again, going back to that tender thing that we talked about right at the beginning, you know, the things that are not hardy, like tropical, subtropical, the sort of lavish, almost irresistible things that we see in the garden center in spring. And, you know, a lot of times they're really expensive.
Yes.
But they make such a fabulous splash if you have them, and, you know, you want to adopt them, but then, what do you do with them at the end of the season? So I think of them as investment plants, as in, I'm going to get my money's worth and more if I can figure out how to make this thing survive. So just
right.
before we go sort of plant by plant, I wondered, you just mentioned you have your sunroom, which is probably 10 degrees cooler than your house or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have your hospital window. Just quickly mm-hmm. tell me the other places that you have that you do some mad stashing, and I'll tell you mine, and then we'll go group by group through the plants.
Well, I have a basement the basement is a little too dry, and it's not that cool, but under what used to be a breezeway and now is the first floor powder room, it's a bathroom.
Right.
That's a space that doesn't have any heat in it, but it's attached to the basement, so it's kind of warm. I think it at the lowest it goes down to about 20, but usually it doesn't freeze in there.
Right.
And I pack as many things in there as
okay.
I can that are dormant, but they would be killed if they went below 20.
Right.
And actually more like 30.
Okay.
Some of these are evergreens, and you keep them dry and kind of dry on the dry side. You know, I check them like once a month, make sure they don't totally dry unless they're overwintering bulbs, some things that lose their leaves completely,
and both,
I let them dry
yeah.
in their pots.
We both have our Euchomus collection, and like I said, we can go plant by plant, but we both have our pineapple lily collection that goes in our cellars, I think, yeah? Or that kind
well,
of place.
Well, that goes in that cool, cold space.
Okay.
Because they're hardy to about zone 7, actually. So
right. So you
go in there and it's, yeah, it's not that cold. It's sort of, it would be the equivalent of a winter in zone 8, I suppose.
So those are your, sort of your three primary storage places, yes?
Yes.
Okay. And I have, I'm in zone 5B. I'm in a colder. I know. Stop it. Everybody always says that. So I can get cold, you know, in the minus double digits for sure, and then some. And so I have an unheated garage, but it's very well insulated. So I have that as one possibility, but I can't guarantee that it's going to be more than a couple of degrees above the outside temperature, okay? Then I have a basement that is probably about, it can be 35 or it can be 45, depending on the kind of winter we're having, you know, because there is a boiler down there, but it's not warm. It can be a little humid, not bone dry. And then I have indoors in the windowsills, of course. Some people, I actually have a, you know, one of those Bilco doors, those exterior, you know, metal doors that you open up and go down a staircase into your basement, a bulkhead. And that's another place. I've never used it, but I know people do use it for certain things that are sort of like that cold space you were talking about. So those are some of the places that I'm using, and then I also have a shed. It's almost like a little cabin, like maybe 12 by 9 or something, that I have a tiny little bit of baseboard heat. So it's sort of is at like 40 degrees, and it's got a little skylight. So it's not bright, but it's not dark. So, okay, so those are my places. So I just thought, you know, and just for caveat for everybody, you got to experiment. Because again, even though Ken and I just described two cellars, right, our cellars are different, right? I mean, they're not the same place. So about stuff in the cellar, we have a question from Shelly on Facebook, Shelly D, and she says, I bought some beautiful variegated canna lilies in the spring, wants to store them for the winter. This will be her first attempt. And to me, those are the easiest of the easy, and that's a cellar thing. Is that cellar thing for you too?
Yes, that can actually go in the cellar that's not that cold.
Okay, that's what I put in my regular basement, yes.
Right.
Just
in
above
this case,
freezing.
It's
yeah.
about dry as more than about cold.
Right. And I let them get hit by frost, blackened by frost, unless no frost comes, you know. But I like the sort of plants to get that trigger and go, if they're going to go dormant, I like nature to tell it, hey, it's time to go dormant. And they do their kind of withering thing if I can get that. Cut them down, you know, so that there's not much stem left. I usually put them in my garage or something, you know, for a couple days just to dry them off a little bit. And I just put them in bins or even in garbage bags, not closed, though, but just sitting open in the cellar. Boom. And, you know, as long as it's above freezing, that's what I do with them. And I have them a million years. So I think those are super easy.
Okay, this is the cannas you're talking
yeah,
about.
Cannas. Oh. Yeah, cannas. Yeah, cannas. Emily, also on Facebook, said, you know, she wanted to know. She didn't dig them up last year. She's in a slightly warmer place. And she wanted to know, like, how they came back up, but they didn't flower this year, which I don't think necessarily, I don't know if that has anything to do with her overwintering them. She wanted to know how hardy they are. I actually had to look it up because, you know, I don't know. I think you can get away in zone six, warmer than zone six. So zone seven and warmer, you can leave them in the ground and some people cheat and mulch them a lot if they're on the border of those temperatures and so forth. But yeah, I mean, I have to dig them, so.
I think that one reason that they might not have flowered is they might have been killed back a bit.
Too much, right?
And,
not
yeah,
enough
and
eyes.
She's getting some of the smaller eyes are growing.
That makes sense. That makes sense, yeah. So, but those to me are the easiest, and I don't even pack them in any kind of medium. You know, I'm just going to pile them up in big flower pots or, as I said, bins or the garbage bags that are left open. Now, callas, we had a couple questions about calla lilies, and I do those dark and dry also, same kind of thing, but I usually leave them in the pots. Just
I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, it's just easier, and you can get a few years in the same pot usually.
You know, when they're outside, sorry to interrupt you, but when they're outside, I turn things like that, I turn the pots on their sides, so while they're still outside, I don't want that medium to be wet.
Good
when I get
point.
In.
So the sort of staging, right? It's not just bring it in soaking wet if you don't have
right.
to.
So
right?
I put the pots on the side and rain won't go in. And I try to get them in a sheltered place. If they still need light, they'll get some light. And then when I bring them in, they're in the dry soil. Because if they're in wet soil and you bring them in, chances are they might rot.
Right. Okay. So that's a very, very good point, which is kind of I said I like to leave the cannas, especially. I'll like take them, you know, take them out of the ground, and then I like to like let them dry, let them cure for a few days in the open air if I have a place, like in the garage or something. Tuberous begonias, to me, now I would put, I know, don't have a nervous breakdown. That's where it's also in the cellar, the same. I only have one cellar, you know what I mean? But these are a little trickier, right?
Yes, or impossible, one of those.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even the experts frequently say the trick to be doing really well with these and with overwintering them is grow them in pots, like little plastic nursery pots. And when you want to put, if you want to put them in beds or in a hanging basket, plunge the pot right in the basket or the bed and put mulch over it. Even expert bulb growers have told me that because it's so easy to damage those succulent tubers when you dig them, and that's where they rot, you know. But if you're going to do, and where to put them, they want more like maybe 50-ish degrees, not like your 20-something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dahlias also, again, I would have to put them in my cellar, but they're a little trickier too, I think. Have you ever stored dahlias?
I don't do the canna thing that you described. That's cannas.
Yeah.
And the dahlia thing, even though we think of them kind of together, I don't do them like you were describing for the cannas.
No.
Sometimes I wrap them in newspaper and, you know, wrap them carefully like it's a gift and tape the newspaper kind of shut. And then I'll sprinkle the newspaper with water through the winter. I've done them in sand. I've done them in peat moss. One time I did them in sawdust, and that worked really well. I've done them in dry leaves, chopped up oak leaves and stuff. All of those things actually have worked.
So Christine on Facebook also wants to know the best way to protect the tubers that she had in storage during the winter from mice. And, you know, I'm obsessed with mouse traps. So, I mean, I would say the best non-toxic way is you've got to check your mouse traps in your storage area all the time, right? And rebait them all the time. I mean, when I say bait, I mean peanut butter, not poison.
You know, I'll bet what you could do if you were wrapping your dahlias and things like that, you could probably put them in a metal trash can with the top closed, as long as you've wrapped them loosely and it's not going to get too wet, just to protect them. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it'd have to have those holes in it, like one of those those cans that's meant for burning or something. It would have to have good, I think, not to get too funky inside.
Tiny holes.
Yeah, tiny holes. Exactly. But Kathy Tracy of Avant Gardens in Massachusetts, you know Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
She says she does a lot of dahlias, and she says, she told me when we spoke a couple years ago about this, she waits for the frost to blacken the foliage. And that's an important thing, even more with the dahlias than it is with the cannas, to really let nature's cue tell them sleep, 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 and let them finish their cycle and wither. And she, I believe she said that at the place where then she cuts off the stems, she sort of turns them upside down a little bit, almost like hangs them upside down, but so that the excess moisture where that stem was, you know, kind of drips out. It doesn't drip back in and rot the tuber.
Yeah.
Some people use a fungicide, you know, and obviously you have to be really careful with that, even if you're using a, quote, natural one, like a copper or sulfur thing. But curing them a little bit before storing them, like before you wrap them in your newspaper, as you said. But she uses, like, wood shavings or peat moss, or she even just puts them in dry potting medium and puts them under a bench somewhere in that cool place. You know, and then when it's time next spring, she's already got them pre-potted. Do you know what I mean?
So it's sort
of, yeah. So that's kind of skipping a step, you know, like not having to get them out of their storage and then pot them and start them early. So I thought that was kind of good. So many different things. Elephant ears. Oh my goodness, elephant ears. These are trickier, and some of these I don't put in the basement. I mean, the old-fashioned ones, you know, those giant ones with the sort of scalloped, shiny green leaves. I think you could put them under the bed, and they'd be okay. Drive them around in your car. I don't know.
Do you let them go yellow and just stave the tuber, or do you keep them growing, the big ones?
Yeah. I mean, I would let them go, you know, quiet down, like dry off, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's been getting trickier. You know who has good instructions on because, you know, there's colocasias and there's alocasias and there's all kinds of different ones. Now there's the ones with that side of matte kind of, you know, purpley leaves and the ones with shiny leaves. And I mean, it's
Xanthosoma.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. Forget it. But seriously, I mean, I think it was Tony Avent, right, at Plant Delights. He has a whole giant collection, and he's friends with a number of the leading breeders and all these new ones that they're developing. He says that, you know, some of them, the newer varieties, they don't form corms as quickly, you know, like a mother bulb, so to speak, as quickly as some of the old timers. So there isn't something under there to store. So, you know, leaving them in their pots and even keeping them growing. Like I've been experimenting with keeping that one Amazonica. Do you know that one with the, it kind of looks like an African mask. It's a very brightly variegated one with a shiny leaf, very triangular the leaf is.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I've been keeping that growing in a cool place, you know, watering it, growing. And now 3-4 years in, the bulb is getting of size where maybe I could store it. I'm not sure. I might just not press my luck and I may just keep growing it. It's almost like a houseplant in my cool mudroom. But Tony on the Plant Delights website, he has about the best, you know, sort of explanation of what's going on with how to figure out which kind yours is, I think. Yeah, but those need to be dry, cool, above freezing if you are storing them, and light and not too hot if you're growing them on as a house plant, I think. I don't know. I mean, those are tricky.
And I think the allocation in very general that we don't let those go dormant.
Right.
And the colocasia, most of those can go dormant, but, you know, some of them you grow outside in the summer in water. You know, you plunge the pot halfway down into water and they like a lot of water. They like to almost grow in water. But then in the winter, they don't want to grow in water. And we bring them in and kind of treat them like limping along house plants. And if you can keep them alive, then they come back kind of in the spring. Well,
right.
They do.
So we only have maybe 2-3 minutes left in the first segment, and we'll go into overtime on some of these things. But which one shall we do now? How about the sort of in your sunroom kind of a place, or my mudroom? Again, it's bright and slightly cooler than the house. Would you put Agapanthus in there? Cecilia wants to know. She paid a lot of money. She said, you know, it was a pricey plant. She bought one. She wants to know where to winter it, overwinter it.
I overwinter it. It doesn't look good. It's not happy. It's alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the best ones I've ever seen overwintered were in one of the Hamptons houses, right up against very, very bright windows in a house where they turn the temperature down, way down during the week or even over the weekend. But so much sunlight, more than I have, you know, with giant windows facing a bay or something. And they look just like they do outdoors, and then they start to bloom in the late spring, and they bloom for quite a while.
Right.
So I think they want to be kept cool, but bright, bright, bright.
So you have an evergreen one, and that's one of the things that Cecilia should know. There's evergreen and sort of non-evergreen varieties.
I can't tell.
Yeah, but the evergreen ones, well, I mean, I don't know. She's got to look it up according to the label on it. The evergreen ones are like about zone 7B-ish. And they want that sort of simulation of a cool greenhouse, you know, that I don't really have. My mudroom's the best place, just like what you were just saying. But the ones that are easier for us northerners, I think, are the non-evergreen ones. They have the less thick leaves, and they're going to go dormant, and those could go in the basement. So that having, with no light or water required.
Oh, I should try that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of good searching those out if for us northern gardeners. So having said that, let's sign off and come back in a second with some overtime, and we're going to talk about succulents and rosemary and stuff that you store in the garage and all kinds of crazy stuff. So
okay,
the Mad Stash continues with Ken Drews. I'll be right back, Ken, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't miss an episode.
I'll be right here.
Okay, everybody else, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or find Ken anytime at kendrews.com. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.
Ken, are you still there?
Of course.
Okay, good. That's good. That's good. So we were in the sunroom when we were so rudely interrupted by the break.
I have so many questions.
Oh, no. Now be quiet. We were in the sunroom and we'd stored some agapanthus, or we'd put some evergreen agapanthus in there, and we'd shove some non-evergreen ones in the cellar, dormant. And Do you store any succulents, non-hardy succulents, like, you know, echeverias or aeoniums or, you know what I mean? Do you do any
yes.
of those? I mean, I do a terrible job with these, I have to say.
Yes.
I don't have. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, these are tricky, but sometimes you can do a good enough job to get good cuttings for next year, right?
Right. Well,
right.
Sure. And keep them alive.
Yeah.
And they're in there right with my citrus plants.
Right. Okay. So
does
now
does that make you think of anything?
That I want to simulate California situations?
Well, that we could
winter in California, I mean?
I think that you got a question about citrus, I believe.
Yes, I'll have to find it here in my crazy notes. It's here somewhere. Yes.
Well, don't have to, but
yeah,
I've got quite a few of citrus. I love citrus. All my life, I wanted to grow citrus. You know, everybody wants fruit in the winter in the house and the wonderful fragrance
right.
of the flowers. And I had plants that lived and lived and lived and never bloomed. But the sunroom, which I redid, it used to have windows that were high energy, wonderful windows with coatings. And I called it dead light because the plants were right in the window,
yes.
but it looked like they were in some bathroom, tiny bathroom
yes.
window, and they just didn't act like they were in the sun. So I redid it with windows that have no coatings.
Like
but that's
full spectrum-y kind of thing.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's all sealed off so it mm-hmm. doesn't cool the whole house or make it warm, actually, either. And they bloom starting usually in February. I'm looking at some fruits because fruits can sometimes take 9 months, like
yes.
a baby or longer.
Yes.
So I've got some Buddha's hand, and I always have finger limes. I love the finger limes. And Meyer lemon, that's about the easiest and best, I think, indoor citrus of all.
You know, I should have said, well, we talked about some of these other plants, that on the transcript version on awaytogarden.com of this show, because there's so much detail, I am going to give lots and lots and lots of links and references if people really want to delve into one particular plant that we've talked about, because obviously we're trying to do a bit of a survey in this mm-hmm. in this time we have allotted. So citrus, and in that same room, again, simulating a California winter, you could try your succulents.
The succulents are in the brightest spot I possibly have, and I keep them kind of dry. They limp along. Sometimes they grow, and that's not so good. Well, it depends on the succulents, too, but you mentioned echeveria. The echeveria, they're alive in March, and then I take them outside, and they're a little bit better. But things like aloes, they're fine. And agave, even, you know, keep them really quiet and cool, and they're okay, too. They just sleep.
Right.
So they're not as troublesome as you happen to mention echeveria.
Sorry about that. Well, and the reason I said it was because of the other thing I said, which is you're going to get this stretched out. Suddenly it's going to push up and stretch out, even if you haven't watered it, even if it's only like 45 degrees where you're keeping right. it, and it is as bright as you can provide. And then suddenly it's going to like stretch out and sort of flop over, and the pot will fall over because it's so top heavy. But the thing about that, and again, this was another Kathy Tracy from Avant Garden. She's the succulent queen. You know, she loves
yes.
succulents, and she's been in her very cold climate in Massachusetts, eastern Massachusetts. She's been growing them and collecting them. She's got one of the best, you know, collections in the Northeast, certainly, of non-hardy as well as hardy succulents. And she disassembles all these extravagant big pots she does in her gorgeous garden and nursery. She puts them in small pots of, you know, very fast-draining, you know, potting soil, like a cactus and succulent mix, right? Pots them down, in other words, from her big urns, and brings them into like 35 to 40 degrees, but with tons of light, and hardly ever waters them. I mean, really, really minimal watering. And she said to me, you know, yeah, the echeverias are going to maybe look like hell, but cut off those tops, let them, you know, what do you call it when they kind of harden off? Callus? Is that the word?
Right,
callus?
Right.
You know,
callus, exactly.
Leave them out to certain, you know, in an airy, dry place, and let them callus for a while, and then root them. And it'll take a long time, but you're going to have the next generation. So she was right, of course, because she's an expert.
huh?
So those can take cool. Again, we're trying to pretend we're in California in the winter. That's what we're simulating, which is dry, cool, and bright. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And dare I ask about rosemary?
Well, that's a whole different thing.
I've killed a lot of rosemaries. Well, but I was thinking of your sunroom, okay? Because you told me the places you have, and I told you the places
I
have. No, I
think it's not cool enough.
I think you're right, and that's why. But your bulkhead in the dark, or whatever it is in the dark, isn't going to do it. And Right. You know, I'm not, and your hospital window isn't going to do it.
No. Nope,
so I'm. That's why I was saying the sunroom is your closest thing, but it's not cool enough, I think. Right?
I think that's it. Not cool enough.
Because really, rosemary and Jean on Facebook said she always tries to bring a rosemary in to winter on a windowsill. She's in zone 5B. And then she says, what you and I are saying, only one has made it past March when it usually dries out and gives up. So
it dries, it dies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I should say I've given up a lot. You know what I mean? Like I've given up because they're not too expensive to buy, really. And so I've given up, and I take the stems off and put them in a plastic bag, freezer bag. And, you know, I take all the branches off, put them in a freezer bag with the needles on, flatten it out, get all the air out, and freeze it. And I have rosemary to cook with forever and ever. I mean, that's what I do with them. Use them on roast potatoes and stuff like that. Isn't that awful? But if you really wanted to overwinter them, and this was something I learned from, do you know Nichols Garden Nursery, Rosemary Nichols McGee? Have you ever met at flower shows or anything?
No,
she's been in the
no.
herb business and the seed business forever and ever. And they're out in the Pacific Northwest. But even there, sometimes they can get cooler. And she says, if you have a rosemary in a pot, first of all, you want the hardiest rosemary you can get. Not all rosemaries are created equal, right? So especially if you're in a cold zone. Anytime it's the 20s or below, it's got to get sheltered. But if it's not the 20s, like don't bring it in too soon and don't keep it in too long. Like, you know what I mean? If your weather stabilizes to 37 or whatever, like get it out of the house. So, but it is, it wants very strong light and wants like 50 max, you know, I mean, or 50 at the most, but more like
most,
40
right.
would be better.
Right.
So it's a really tricky one, guys, and I mean, I just don't think people should feel bad about not in the north, not having a good spot for that.
Do you think that's probably the same for Spanish lavender?
Oh, I wouldn't. I mean, I can't even grow it.
But people, you know, they sell it, and I've seen it at the box stores right next to the hardy lavenders, which is horrible, and people buy them because they're so pretty. I think it's Lavandula stoicus or something like that. And they're pretty and they bloom and they're not hardy.
Hmm.
Or you could move to Tuscany or the south of France.
That's a good idea. That's a way to overwinter them.
Or Farmingdale, Long Island.
So,
do that.
So let's talk about some sort of, there were a number of questions. Hill in zone 7B asked about strawberry plants in a strawberry pot. And Coco asked, again on Facebook, about clematis in pots. She wants to know what to do with them. And Jean, who's in, I think, zone 4, she put paper bark maple trees in pots. Mm. You know, I grow Japanese maples in big pots. And she wants to know what to do about them. They're zone 5 plants. And she's in zone 4, as I said. And Leslie, she put some evergreens, a Japanese plum yew, and some other things in New Jersey in a pot. And, you know, people are saying, like, what do I do with these things that are sort of hardy or almost hardy or whatever? And to me, this is the sort of garage or your...
Oh, exactly.
Or your whatever you call your place, right?
Well, yes. An unheated... Well, your garage / barn / garage. That's
right.
The place where the... Because then they'll be out of the wind. And if they're kind of dormant, pretty much dormant if they drop their leaves... They're not going to get burned by the wind, and they're going to be a little protected, but they're going to be allowed to go down to, you know, if you're in zone 4, it'll feel like zone 5 in there, or zone 5, it'll feel like zone 6. But when you mention the evergreen things, that's a little trickier, I think.
Right, because those can dry out too much, and they do have their leaves on, unlike these other things that are deciduous.
Right.
They do have their leaves on, so they are... not photosynthesizing at a wildly active rate, but they are accustomed to being in light. So I put those, I have some columnar conifers, which you and I have talked about before, in pots that I like to use as accents in the garden seasonally. But I don't want them to get all beat up, and besides, the pots are clay and they'd explode outside,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I drag them into the garage, but, and again, unheated garage, insulated but unheated. I put them... by the two windows. That's what gets the windows. I don't bother putting a Japanese maple or something else that's leafless, even my figs, and we have to talk about figs quickly next. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't put deciduous things that are dormant near a window. I don't give that precious, cold, bright space. I give that to the conifers, if that makes sense. Yeah?
To the plum yew that you mentioned, and something like that that's evergreen. And some people think that the products that you can spray, the anti-desiccants, don't work, and it's silly. And some people think that they do work. And frankly, I think they kind of do work.
Yeah.
They keep the moisture
that's
in the needles
idea.
And the leaves. I wouldn't put it on something glaucous like your conifers, but for the plum yew and something with a little broader leaves, I might try that. But I think you're covered with that. If you happen to build a garage with windows or have one.
Right. But as far as the clematis in pots, I'm not worried about the clematis. It's that it's above ground in a pot and the root zone is therefore a lot cold, like a zone colder or so.
Sure.
And so the pot's probably going to bust, so I'd put it in the garage, and I think those will do great. Same with that strawberry jar. The paperbark maple, besides the fact that she's in zone 4 and it's a zone 5 plant, it's a 25-foot tree, so it's not going to be too happy too long in a pot, even a very, very, very large pot. So that would be my thing there. But I want to race on before we run out of time. I want to race on to figs because that's one of the most common questions. Joey said, I'm in zone 5B, have a potted fig. I want to roll it into the garage. It's just a baby of a couple of feet tall. What should I do, and do I water in the winter? And, you know, I always have asked Mr. Fig. I've got a couple of figs myself, and I asked Lee Reich years ago about this, and
Uncommon Fruits.
Yeah, Uncommon Fruits Worthy of Attention was his first book where we all got to know him, and he's done many since. But, I put mine in zone 5B in this insulated garage, and they're fine, and they live and live and live, right? And they don't even get dieback. It can get to zero in there easily, right? But he said, Lee always reminds me that if it gets too big, because he's always like, how much longer are you going to wheel that damn thing around, you know? And he's like, lay it down, pull it out of the pot, you know, on a tarp, and cut off half the root ball, like root prune it, because it needs it anyway to stay small in a pot, right? And then drag it into your cellar, like put a plastic bag around, you know, for scent, so that all the root ball doesn't fall apart, like wrap it up, drag it into your cellar. He says you can even cut them back. You know, because, I mean, after all, people have grown them in areas where the whole top of the plant isn't entirely hardy and prune them hard, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so they can now take...
He's only wrapping the root ball.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes, yes. Just so that it's not a mess all over your basement floor, right?
Right.
You know, put it in a plastic bag loosely tied, the root ball.
Yeah, I didn't want people to put the top growth in place.
No. But, you know, and just drag it into your cellar and let it be down there cold. And he says, you know, 20 degrees, 30 degrees, perfect, fine, whatever. But he keeps his in a 35-degree-ish space. So that's one of the, you know, there's many ways. They're more hardy than we think. And then, of course, there's some that are hardier than others. Again, the variety that a person has is going to make a big difference. Yeah. We had more and more and more questions that we're not going to get to, Ken.
That's right.
But that's okay. That's okay. It was great to I'll try to answer some of them. Maybe you can jump in, too, and we can answer some of them right on Facebook.com/awaytogarden. So the Mad Stash, it's just ahead, Ken. Are you ready?
No, but am I ever?
Oh.
No.
All right. Well, I'll be checking in with you. Thank you for helping.
Thank you, Margaret.
All right. Talk
Always
to you soon.
Fun.
Okay. And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy stashing all those plants meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.